29. The music was muted and the lanterns dimmed. They sat together in the gathering quiet as the party wound down to its natural conclusion. McKinley and Takahashi had wandered off into the woods, leaving Bella and Svetlana alone. The remaining handful of revelers watched them guardedly, while pretending not to notice. Everyone must have been aware of the significance of this meeting. They had gradually become easier in each other's presence. It was not exactly a relaxed state of affairs. Bella was acutely conscious of monitoring every nuance of every word she and Svetlana uttered, but they were at least able to have something that, to a casual witness, might have approximated a normal conversation. "Now and then I hear things from Emily," Svetlana said. "I know she probably isn't meant to talk about her work, but I can be very persuasive." "I'm not surprised," Bella said. She corrected herself quickly. "That you'd be interested, I mean. Sometimes I think I should release all their findings and speculation at once and damn the consequences, but another part of me worries about how we'd all deal with that." "You're probably right," Svetlana said. "Things are pretty stable and well adjusted now, even if I say so myself. But we still don't know much more about the aliens, or the spiker structure, or what our long-term situation is. I worry that if we learn something unpleasant, we might not hold together. Do you ever think?" Svetlana stopped and looked at her hands. "What?" Bella asked gently. "Does it ever occur to you that maybe we're going to be stuck inside this thing forever? It's been 35 years now, and we're still no closer to finding a way out. It sounds like a long time." "It is, Bella, by any measure. Not compared to the 260 years it took us to get here, though. From the standpoint of whoever made this thing, we might just be in some kind of quarantine period now." "And the fountainheads?" Svetlana asked dubiously. "Are they in quarantine as well?"
"I don't know," Bella said.
"Well, where exactly do they fit in? And all the other species you have intelligence data on? The data's sparse. We really don't know as much as you might think. But you know that we aren't the only species inside this thing. That's why the fountainheads are so keen not to have us go poking our noses beyond the end cap door." Glumly, Bella remembered McKinley's recent warning about the musk dogs. "I think they have our best interests at heart," she said. Svetlana nodded knowingly. "They certainly have someone's best interests at heart. Nothing we've learned in all these years has made us doubt that we can trust the fountainheads." "They've been good to us," Svetlana allowed. "Rejuvenations, little gifts of technology and culture. But the technology and culture were already ours. We had every right to them. They've given us nothing of themselves beyond a few hints and tips about how to get more out of Janus. They know best, I think." Svetlana's expression was troubled. "I've been thinking about the cutoff a lot lately. Doesn't that strike you as odd?"
"In what way?"
"That they know so much about us up to a specific date, and then nothing." "They only made contact with us on that one occasion," Bella said, reciting the standard line. "They acquired human cultural data up to the time of the contact, but beyond that they have no information."
"We already know they must have superluminal signaling, Bella. Maybe even superluminal travel. How else did that knowledge overtake us?"
Bella shifted uncomfortably on the tree stump.
"I'm not sure what you're getting at. If they had that signaling capacity, doesn't it strike you as odd that the fountainheads only ever encountered one single ship from Earth? We already know that the Tai expansion was a concerted effort to establish extrasolar colonies around more than one star. They must have sent out lots of ships in all directions across many decades, only one of which encountered the fountainheads," Bella pointed out. "But the fountainheads are a star-faring culture with a technology far beyond our own. I remember those discussions aboard Rockhopper, Bella. Once you get one advanced star-faring culture, you expect it to encompass a huge swath of the galaxy, tens of thousands of solar systems at the very least, in very little time."
"Which is very little time by galactic standards," Bella said, detesting the pedantic tone she heard in her own voice.
"Okay. We might still be talking hundreds of thousands of years, but that's still nothing in cosmic terms. It's just an eye blink. The fountainheads should have been out there, massively established in all directions."
"Maybe they were.
And yet when the Tai expansion fired ships into the night, only one of them ran into the fountainheads? That just doesn't stack up, Bella. There should have been multiple contacts, and not all happening simultaneously either. Some of the ships would have further to travel before they hit the fountainheads, and some of them would have left later. They'd all have been carrying different sets of historical and cultural data, some of them updated later than others. And unless those ships were moving very close to the speed of light, they'd have had no trouble receiving newer data from Earth. Svetlana smiled and shook her head. Listen to me, like I thought all this up for myself. I didn't. I just listened to the right people. I do the same thing, Bella said. All the same, it still bothers me. The fountainheads should have collected data from dozens, maybe even hundreds, of different contact episodes. And with superluminal signaling, they should have had no difficulty in merging those data sets. There'd still have been a cutoff, Bella said. No matter how many individual contacts took place, there'd still have been one ship that was carrying the most up-to-the-minute cultural data. I know, but by then the Thai expansion should have been underway for many years. It should already have been part of the history records aboard the ship, even if they were based on updates beamed aboard after launch. But that isn't how it's presented to us, is it? The fountainheads haven't presented much to us at all, Bella said. They've allowed us to draw our own inferences, based on the data they allow us to see. I still don't see what you're driving at. I'm saying it doesn't add up. I'm saying there's something wrong here, something that doesn't make sense. If we believe the story that the fountainheads apparently want us to believe, then we have to accept that they've only ever made contact with us once, despite our expectation that it would either never happen or happen many separate times. We also have to accept that, for reasons of their own, they choose not to act in any of the ways we'd expect a starfaring culture to behave. There is, of course, an alternative. Which is? Bella asked. That they're lying to us, Svetlana said. Bella woke early the next morning, glad that she had refrained from drinking much at Takahashi's party. Her mind was gin clear now, yet it rang with the world-changing implications of her renewed communication with Svetlana. It would be too much to expect them ever to be close friends again. Bella was too much of a realist for that. But simply to be on cordial terms would be a wonderful improvement on the way things had been since the crisis on Rockhopper. And while friendship might be ruled out, perhaps they could become allies again of a kind. The transformation ought to have enlivened her and filled her with a renewed sense of purpose. It did, for a little while. She busied herself with administrative affairs and renewed promises to herself to close a number of issues that had been left pending for far too long, including the Bagley inquiry. With a reinvigorated sense of optimism, she rubber-stamped funds for a slew of projects she had been dithering over for weeks. New perpetual motion wheels, new maglev routes, new massively serial computer mainframes to handle the most taxing analysis tasks required by the Ofria Gomberg Institute. An offer from the Fountainheads to drill two new skyholes to ease congestion at Underhull. Go ahead for a Phase A feasibility study for the Crabtree Dome, which would encompass the entire community as far out as the Mareville and Shengtown suburbs and reach twice as high as the High Hab itself. An even longer-term scheme for pumping atmosphere into the entire volume between Janus and the Iron Sky, so that they could dispense with domes altogether. Such matters would normally have consumed every iota of Bella's attention, but now she could not stop thinking about her conversation with Svetlana. Try as she might, she could not dismiss the doubts Svetlana had raised concerning the truthfulness of the Fountainheads. By lunchtime, she had completed more than her usual quota of business for a day. As arranged, she met Parry Boyce in one of the Arboretum and treated him to lunch while she told him about her progress on the Bagley case. "I thought I was getting somewhere 15 years ago," she said, while they ate out of picnic bags, "but I let it drop. I was too worried about stirring up old ghosts back then. Now's the time, though." Parry asked her what she wanted of him. Bella explained that she needed information concerning the EVA log files, how easy it would have been to delete or alter them, using the Flexi die-off as a cover. "Easy enough for someone on the inside," Parry told her. He had been Skyside for rejuvenation 30 years ago, and now had a physiological age of somewhere in the early 60s. His mustache was grey,
his hair peeking out in sparse grey curls from beneath the ancient and faded red cap that bore the evidence of numerous repairs. He was still stocky, with the unforced musculature of someone who spent a lot of time in the high G-zones. Would there have been a backup somewhere? Parry grimaced. You're going back a long way now. Bella flicked crumbs at a loitering squirrel, one of the gene-constructed mammals populating the Arboreta. 43 years really isn't that long anymore. You'll kick up a storm. Better now than later. I can't let it slip for another 15 years, Parry. We need to open one last wound, heal it, and move on. I guess you're right. You know I'm right. Back when they killed Tom Crabtree, you moved quickly to punish the men responsible. It was fast, brutal, effective. I've never said this before, but I agreed with the way you handled it. She saw flinching pain in his eyes, as if she was forcing him to review memories he would much sooner have kept locked away. Memories of the quick, percussive impact of hammer drills against the thin armor of helmets. Memories of blood spattering ice. Memories of two kneeling corpses pitching forward as if in supplication. I'm not proud of what we did to Chanticleer and Herrick. It was wrong to kill them. We don't kill anymore. We incarcerate. Only because we've got the aliens looking down on us. Bella scrunched up her picnic bag. It's a matter of practicality, that's all. People in prison can still fulfill useful functions for Crabtree. Would you still kill them if they weren't useful? I don't know, Bella said. Would it make any difference if I said yes? Parry stood up. I'll see what I can dig up for you. I just want you to understand that there'll be consequences. There always are, Bella said. When she had finished with Parry, she made her way to the secure laboratory that housed the Black Cube. It lay under one of the outlying suburbs, screened within nested layers of spray rock, acoustic dampening material, and multiple Faraday cages. The cube was never left unattended. Today it was Hannah Ofria Gomberg's turn to mother it, while robot sensors clicked and hummed through some methodical analysis sequence. It was deeply boring work, and Hannah looked both delighted to have any company at all, and startled that it was Bella paying her a visit. She was sitting in a padded seat, booted feet up on the desk, when Bella arrived. Hannah snatched tortoiseshell glasses from her face. They were deliberately hefty, late 21st century retro chic. Opera music buzzed from the earpieces. Opera was the new thing now, Bella had noticed. All the kids were into it. It's all right, Bella said. I didn't come to check up on you. I just dropped by to see how things are coming along. Nothing new down here, Hannah said, bending her long legs under the desk. We're still running the same old, same old. Did you see the last report we put together? Oh, yes, Bella said, rolling her eyes. The usual thrilling document. You all deserve some kind of medal for bashing your heads against that thing for so long. Maybe if it wasn't just our heads we bashed, we might get somewhere. Bella nodded gravely. I'm sure we'd learn a thing or two about the cube if we sliced through it with a fusion flame, but then we wouldn't have much of a cube anymore. We could snip off a corner. One day, maybe. Until then, you'll just have to be patient. Bella walked closer to the rotating cube, careful not to cross the red line on the floor that marked the limit for human observers. Closer than that, and her own bioelectric fields would ruin the scans. Is there something? Hannah began. Not particularly, Bella said. I just like to come down here now and then and take a good look at it. It's like a puzzle I'm hoping will one day solve itself before my eyes, like one of those psychology problems. It does that to people, Hannah said. They come down here, take a look at the thing, and then they keep coming back to stare at it, transfixed. It's as if they've seen something in that blackness, some hint of a message. Do you experience that? I just see a black cube. One I'd really like to cut open one of these days. I'm glad the job isn't getting to you. Bella had studied the reports endlessly, even when they threatened to send her to sleep, but nothing in those summaries offered any hint of the cube's real purpose. It was a human artifact, but it did not appear to have originated within the timeline leading up to the cutoff. If it dated from after the cutoff, what secrets did it hold? More than that, how had it reached Janus? The Fountainheads had never spoken of it. If they knew of its existence now, if they had picked up that knowledge from their human contacts, then they must have chosen not to mention it. Why? A thought tickled the back of Bella's mind, nastily. Were the Fountainheads neglecting to mention the cube because they did not want to draw attention to its significance? She thought again of her conversation with Svetlana, and of the poisonous doubts Svetlana had insinuated into her mind. Bella had visited the Fountainheads for the first time just after she had been shown the cube. The knowledge of its existence would still have been in her short-term memory, gleaming like a jewel. They must know about it. So, again, why had they never mentioned it? The cube continued its slow hypnotic revolution, squirming between one abstraction of blackness and the next. The Da Vinci face turned into view, the stylized man, spread-eagled as if for dissection. The analysis machines tracked and scanned. Bella held herself back from the red line, at the same time imagining reaching out to touch the cube. She had touched it once, wearing haptic gloves, had stroked the Euclidean hardness of its surfaces, like something carved from the very bedrock of reality itself. She had felt something of its antiquity creep through the data channels, but she had never had the courage to remove the gloves and press skin against matter. Suddenly it was vitally, crushingly necessary that she do just that. The compulsion came over her with the force of a seizure. The cube urged her to reach out and touch it. It wanted human contact. Bella gasped and stepped back from the red line before she did real harm. Her heart was racing. The anticipation had been almost sexual, like the rising moments before climax.
"Bella?" Hannah asked. "Are you..."
Bella found her breath and took another cautious step away from the cube. She could still feel that compulsion. It was weaker now, but still there, still exerting some measure of control. The Da Vinci figure came into view again. The details of the man's face had been simplified to little more than a motif, but that calm expression appeared to hold back some vast, lacerating knowledge, a burden it was almost too much to bear.
"What do you want with me?"
It was almost certainly her imagination, but in that moment she felt a silent answer flood her brain like a hot summer tide. Not a word, not even the memory of a word, but just a single, devastating truth.
"You."